on revenue. On the scheduled day of public hearing, possible work sessions on Senate Bill 550, Senate Bill 746, and Senate Bill 833. Before we connect, we should use a bit more information, and Mr. Myers here has done a run.
Elizabeth has done the run.
Elizabeth.
I thought first it might be wise to take a few minutes to go over a table that I provided you at the last meeting that we had this hearing. I'll give you a little bit of background. I don't know which bill folder you might have put it in. Table, and then there's also a copy out of the statutes of Chapter 603 that was enacted in 1997. That's when I'll refer to that.
Do you have any more of the table?
Two pages of this.
I know. Do you have any additional copies?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you.
There you are.
I've got the statute.
Okay, this table is, if you recall, Senate Bill 550 provided for other options to a local option tax besides the property tax. And so when I put this table together, I kept that in mind to try to keep it broad so that if the local option were an income tax or sales tax or some other kind of tax, that these are the kinds of issues that you would perhaps have to deal with in adopting some legislation. So under the local option tax issues columns, you have various kinds of questions we'll go through. And in the other two columns, you have the property tax local option, and I've split that up between what's in the Constitution now, from Measure 50, and then the current statutes that were also adopted last session that deal with the property tax local option. The first issue is the tax authority, who can use the local option for schools. It's either going to be a K-12 school district, educational service district, or community college district. Constitution language just refers to school districts. And for the school districts, then it also says that there has to be some kind of legislative action before the school district could impose the local option. In the current statutes, community colleges do have a local option now. And last session, the legislature also granted school districts a local option, but it was conditional. And it was conditional on whether the $150 million lottery bond was passed by the voters or not. If it was passed, then the school districts didn't have a local option authority, and that's what happened. So currently, they do not have the local option authority that is in the Chapter 603 that you have a copy of. So that was negated by the vote outcome. Next issue is tax base, whether it's property or some other, and as I've mentioned, the other includes sales income, gross receipts, excise, etc. Senate Bill 550 was a very broad approach that basically allowed any tax that the school district chose to be a local option. For the community colleges, the tax base amount is the gap, the college portion of the gap, less any college gap bond. It's a little unclear just how that gap is measured, specifically whether it is set as set at the amount that it was in 1979, or whether that gap can grow as real market value grows. But I don't know of any community college that has asked for voter approval or a local option yet anyway, but it's possible. The next issue is the tax, or the amount of tax or the rate, whether it's limited or unlimited. The constitutional limit is the tax cap between measures 5 and 50, where measure 5 is the $5 times real market value, and the measure 50 amount is the tax rate times assessed value. The tax couldn't, the property tax could not exceed that, and of course could be less than that. If there were some other local option, that doesn't apply, so it could be unlimited. The statutes require that the local option either be an annual uniform tax rate for the period of time that it's in place, or it has to be a uniform dollar amount. And that language basically copies what used to be the old cereal levy, being either a $6 amount or a $6 rate for a period of time.
Senator Beyer.
It has to be an annual rate or a dollar amount, but how long can it go for?
Oh, we're coming to that.
Oh.
Sorry. It's the five years for operations, or up to 5 years for operations, and for capital, it's the lesser of 10 years for the useful life of the capital. What the Constitution says. The revenue per student could either be capped using different measures of students, either average daily membership or weighted average daily membership, or it could be uncapped and be whatever the other restrictions might allow the district to raise. The language that was adopted last session limited us to $250 per weighted ADM. So it was not a high amount, but it was on an ADMW basis rather than ADM. So one bill that the House is working on now uses ADM, not ADMW. Number five, the effective date could either apply to the first time that the district can go out for an election, or it could apply to the first tax year that the local option tax would be in effect. From a practical standpoint, a local option probably couldn't be in place before 2001, just because of when the session will end and having time for an election after that before the beginning of the fiscal year. And I don't know of any, haven't seen any amendments or language that would enact something sooner than that. For the election, basically what information would have to be on the ballot, what would the school district have to present to the voters in the way of information, what dates could their election be held, and what kind of majority would be required. The Constitution now for property taxes only requires a single majority if the election is held at a general election. If it's at any other election, that requires a double majority, one of voters voting and two of votes cast. The other elections would include a primary election. Under the statute, the ballot has to have on it a certain amount of information. It has to have the estimated dollar amount to be raised in total, or the annual rate if it's a rate levy. And then it also requires that there be language saying that the result may increase taxes more than 3%. Revenue use under number seven is either dedicated or undedicated. May be dedicated to capital uses like new construction, or it may be undedicated and up to the district as to how it decides to use the money. The statutes refer to, for property tax local options, any service project, property, or equipment. That's very broad language, basically applies to that. Any use. Number eight, the K-12 formula local revenue. The numbers, if there are limits, would probably be based on estimates that the voters would be asked to approve. The question is what happens if the actual amounts come out over the limit. The language adopted in 97 said that if it was over the limit, then all of the dollars that were above the limit would be considered local revenue in the school distribution plan. And what that did basically then would be to increase local revenue for that district, reduce the state school fund dollars that went to that district, and spread those dollars additional tax dollars statewide. So that was a very strong incentive for the school district not to exceed any limit. Also, the local option revenue, property tax local option revenue is usually excluded from local revenue in the formula. Otherwise, it would pretty much defeat the purpose of being raised locally and spent in that local school district than being shared statewide. Census, lots of different options there. How many years could the school district ask the voters to approve the local option? As we mentioned, 5 years for operations is in the Constitution now, 10 years for capital. How many local options could a school district have? If it didn't use its full local options in the first, could it go back for a second? If it got one to pass, could it go back for a renewal after 5 years or whatever the life of it was? Would there be some tax year after which there could not be any local option taxes, or some election date beyond which the district couldn't go to the voters for new local options or renewals? Or could it be some kind of statewide date where there's a cutoff point for all local option revenue, even if the 5 years or time periods have not been fully used by the district? On the administration side, if it were a property tax local option, of course, it would be up to the assessors and be controlled by the property tax statute. If it were something else, then you would need to specify whether it was basically whether it was the Department of Revenue that was the administrator of it or whether it was the school district itself. And I don't think there's much interest in having school districts become revenue departments. So there would have to be somebody with administrative authority to deal with compliance, collection, appeals, penalties, and those kinds of issues that all come into play. Finally, under equity, a local option might be intended to be unequal in terms of its impact on a per student base in school districts, but there's also the taxpayer side of it. Would there be any equity concerns for the taxpayer, as well as the student? There's a minimum dollar amount per student given a certain amount of local effort. And also whether the school districts would have similar incentives to seek voter approval. Would the revenue that they could generate be sufficient to warrant their going to the trouble and dealing with the issue with the voters? So those are some of the major issues. Common issues, no matter what the tax is, but I thought it would be useful to see the context of that within the what we know to be the constraints for a property tax local option.
Thank you for that review. Are there any comments or questions? All right. Why don't we'll invite Lori Wimmer to come up and. She signed up on 550, but I'm sure she would have comments that would apply to all of them.
Good afternoon, Chair Miller and committee members. For the record, my name is Lori Wimmer, OEA Government Relations Consultant, and I am indeed here to speak conceptually to local option. The Oregon Education Association thanks you for considering this. We do, in concept, support local option, and as some of you may have heard, with caveats, I'm the arrow in the quiver girl. We believe that local option is something that ought to be a tool in our bag of tricks, but because just as, and again, I've said this before as well, just as you want to diversify your investment portfolio, I think the broader the base of funding options for schools, the more stable over time they can become. However, the equity issues concern us. The political issues concern us with respect to the movement of the budget in this building. And certainly the use of the money concerns us with respect to is this backfill versus adequate funding from the most responsible entities for funding schools. We heard from our colleagues a few years ago at a conference in the Florida equivalent of me, told me that one legislature there enacted a lottery for Florida dedicated to education. And that legislature really felt compelled to do so because they felt that their current funding sources were inadequate to meet the public school needs. And they also felt that it should not be backfilled, that it should be new money over the top. And they honored that commitment. But the next legislature came in and had a different view of it, and they reduced their general fund support to schools by an equivalent amount of the lottery take. And because we can't foresee what future legislatures may do, we would just submit for the record that that makes us a little nervous that that could happen with a local option. But in general, we do support the concept. If there is any intent to do some sort of work group to fine-tune a piece of legislation to move, we would certainly be willing to participate if that would be the chair's pleasure. And with that, I'll take your questions or go sit down.
We thank you for your comments. Are there questions? Thank you. We have another witness too, Vicki Cotton.
Chair Miller, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Cotton, our Community College Association. Last session, you folks gave community colleges the local option authority. I see it's in your materials that you have here. And when it was granted, the legislature wanted to make sure the door was left open that if and when you came back and considered giving K-12 the local option, that we wouldn't have gone out in the meantime and used up all the gap or whatever for any of our local option authorities. So at the end of the session, in order to write it quickly, a limitation was imposed, and I have my testimony here in front of you on one page, about five lines down. It basically said that our local option authority right now is limited to the amount of our initial Measure 50 losses. And statewide, that's about $27 million, and it because of the statutory limitation, that's forever. And to give you some perspective, it's just a little bit over $3 million for Portland Community College, our biggest college, as you portion that $27 million out statewide. OCCA introduced Senate Bill 701, which is on the back of your testimony, and that I brought in here, and hoping to address the limitation issue. This is not what I asked legislative council for, but it's what I got. They put on there that the limitation would grow 3% a year, which is, as you know, the limit on Measure 50. As I was working with people and thinking about it, how it appears some solutions we might want to consider, and I would ask you to consider, is that in Chemeketa's district alone, right here, there are 21 school districts. And the odds of all 21 of them having a local option levy approved at the exact same time are probably pretty slim. The odds of us, a community college, having a local option approved or less slim, and I don't want to speculate what the odds are, but it doesn't seem like you should limit the amount that the college could get in areas where they may not do a local K-12 option ever. Maybe they don't want to, or for whatever reason. That doesn't mean that you necessarily need to sign it off to us either. I thought I made some suggestions at the bottom of my testimony, and possible solutions would be if the college, let's say, went out and had a local option approved, and then subsequently, let's say, Salem came in and they had a local option approved, and we're all sharing the same gap authority. The three solutions that seem logical as possibilities is you could split the gap between the two, or you could apportion it and apportion it based on how much of a share you had under the Measure 50 limits, and then you'd want to address, do you divide what the ESD authority if you didn't give it, or do you take it out for that issue? Or you could ratio out. You could take our permanent rate and make it a ratio to their permanent rate and then allow us to share the gap that way. At any rate, I'm looking for equitable solutions, not complex math. And I'm hoping that you'll consider looking at the limitation in our local option as you consider the K-12 local option issue.
Thank you, Vicki. Any other questions? Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Ross.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to be here. For the record, I'm Barbara Ross, state representative from Corvallis. And I did want to just talk a little bit about the need, the important need for a local option that would fund K-12 schools. Across the state, our school districts have very different and unique funding situations. They have different populations, different citizens. But no matter what level the legislature passes this session and what long-term funding scheme we get into, there is not going to be enough to do some extra things that local school districts want to do. And I think it's very important that we allow citizens to continue to have some stake in their local schools, to have some investment, and to have some choice about the kinds of actions they take. When I go out and talk to people in the public, they want their tax dollars spent on schools. That's what they want it spent on. And in local elections, when they know exactly what their tax dollars are going for, they're usually willing to vote money for specific things that they understand. And we have had such a strong emphasis on the standards, back to the basics, being sure we are... Our students are confident in math and English and reading and computer science, and those things are very important, but they're also things that are important to a whole child and to personal development, art, music, PE, sports, after-school activities, anti-gang activities, all those kinds of things that emphasize individual development, I think are important challenges, and those are things that many communities are interested in making sure that their schools are able to provide. So I would urge you to do this partly because I think that with a local option, we will have a better rounded education. We will have extra things that the state will never be able to fully pay for. And it gives local parents and citizens an opportunity to participate in decisions about their own school. And we have that investment of parents. And I think we need more parent involvement, more community ownership of schools, and not less. And if we just take over all the control at the state level, we make all the decisions up here, I think our schools will be poorer for it. So I'm very happy you're taking up this issue, and I would urge you to go forward.
Well, thank you for your testimony. I agree with what you've said here, and one of the things you said is there are several communities that would like to go beyond what they can go beyond now. You worry that that gets us into a situation where courts would say that, you know, that's not equitable and back to square one?
I have not studied this to the degree that you have, but my impression is that if we had a 10% limit, we would not get into this. I think that the levels that the governor suggested and that the House Representatives, leadership has suggested, those would, I think, are defensible in terms of a basic core education and a current service level. They're not perfect because different school districts are very different, as you heard from the testimony and the education subcommittee, that different schools have different levels. But I think that we can certainly defend allowing local communities to enrich their educational offerings, and I think as long as we do have some kind of limit on it, we are not going to get into that. Now, I think Jim Furchinger is the best person. He believes that we can craft a legally defensible local option. And his comments are that judges don't throw you out on the equity issue as long as you have a responsible system. And I think if we have a system that has said we are, in fact, going to look at last year's costs and we're going to have some kind of current service roll-up, I think we can defend that system. It's just if we don't have any system, if we don't have a defense ready, that's when the judges say you don't know what you're doing. And so it's my personal belief, based on my confidence in him, that we can certainly do that. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Yes. All right, before we get to Elizabeth, let me see, is there anyone else who wish to comment on any of these local option bills? For Gallup.
Mr. Chair, I have to watch my back, so I'll sit sideways. Mr. Chair, I've done this a couple of times on the House side now, and I'll do it here. My name is Tom Gallagher. I represent a collection of industrial clients and retail sales clients. We're watching the taxes now very closely. The issue that I want to speak to is the issue of raising revenue and applying some tax fairness and tax equity across the different districts that raise different revenues. What happens now with local governments on the fee issues and other issues is when you want to raise money, you scroll off a whole series of different kinds of places you can raise it. System development charges, motel hotel taxes, these are common local gas taxes, common type taxes that have some political possibility of being passed. And you don't sit down and you don't look at the tax equity of the situation. You look at the political ability to raise the revenue. And I'm not for or against this particular bill. But we have local governments in this area looking to raise revenues from some of the same sources. Witness the Multnomah County Business Income Tax, and I think that's a good driving force for this. We have a lot of businesses in Multnomah County that compete internationally. While these business taxes at this point are not very large, it depends on how much revenue has to be raised by them. And the only point I want to make is I think we're getting closer and closer to having to look at some fundamental tax reform in the state and sorting out what tax revenues and what taxable sources should be apportioned to each level of government so that there's not competition. The last point I'll make is just a simple one. It's on gas taxes. When you raise a local option gas tax because it's convenient and necessary for a local road improvement fund, you create a market disincentive there, especially if you're inside a place like on a freeway or where there are edges. People will move away from that tax. So one of two things happen. You either can't pass it on or you raise your price and you lose volume. And that's just a simple one that everybody can see as you drive along and you look for a place to buy your gasoline. You can see that come into play. It may not be so much on a local hotel tax, but if you start levying or school districts or others start levying local business income taxes, local grocery receipts taxes, you have the cost of collection problems, you have the different impacts, and as businesses' market areas change and grow larger, those taxes have some real impact. So my only point of being here is to say that I understand the need for all of these different districts, schools, and local governments to raise revenue. What I don't think we have is the best ability to make decisions on the impact of these taxes in each of these jurisdictions, and I think it's something that in time the state legislature is going to have to sort out. Where should each tax reside? If Multnomah County or the Portland area had raised a 6 cent gas tax that they were talking about 4 years ago, you wouldn't be down here talking about a gas tax for the rest of the state, because you couldn't get those political votes out of that area. We can throw off the whole tax system by letting local governments and local school districts get involved in revenue-raising pieces. This is not to speak against the fact that they need more revenue. It's to speak against how we raise it and to look at the whole tax scheme. That's my only point. Thank you.
Thank you for making questions. Anyone else?
Elizabeth? Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'll just give you a quick rundown of this first initial run that was done on the local option authority for schools. And we are using, just so everyone knows, we are using the most recent data, the 98-99 data, but it is preliminary data. We'll still do some more checking and things in order to make sure that some numbers coincide and are consistent. So, and we also do not have Benton County real market data, so this was estimated in this particular run. So with that in mind, to begin with, it's all categorized by county, each school district, and then the first column after the school name is the county tax authority used. And what this means is that this was any K-12 authority that was used in 98-99, as well as of their permanent rate and any gas authority that they might have had was included in there. And this was not only K-12, but ESDs and community colleges. So all the, that authority was summed up by the something they called the code areas. And so this is something that was done at a code area, but we know that this Measure 5 compression can happen at a property-by-property level, okay? And we cannot get to that level at with the data that we have, so we have to simulate it at a code area. And so just realize that this was a ESDs and community colleges in K-12, their authority that they used in 98-99, that's that second column. And then the third column there is the Measure 5 tax. And what this is looking at that real market value for each one of the schools. They total amount of real market value they have authority over and multiplying that by $5 per $1,000 of real market value. Now, another thing that we were under the assumption that you kind of wanted to look at was what would happen if you had an additional dollar of authority here for schools. So instead of having the $5 limit, they'd have a $6 limit. So that's what this fourth column here is doing, is that we look then at a $6 limit, what would be the Measure 5 tax that would be the cap for the schools. And so as you can see, this is generating quite a bit more authority for the various school districts. Now, the first then going on to the fifth column there, that first gap amount is on the $5 limit. And then, again, the gap amount is just taking that Measure 5 tax that you have there in the third column, minusing the current tax authority used, which is in the second column there. So that basically is column 3 minus 2 for the first gap amount. And then for the sixth column there, you see that that is just looking at a $6 limit. Okay, so if the Measure 5 tax was based on $6, then that would be the gap amount that would be available for the various schools. So that would be like column 4 minus 2. And then the final column there is just what is the difference between these two gap amounts that is raised between the $6 limit versus the $5 limit. And then that just shows you that dollar amount increase. And this is roughly $1 times the real market value per $1,000 of value, or per $1,000 real market value. So to kind of, at the end here, we have at the very page 8, gives you totals for these gap amounts for this state. And we see that the total amount under $5 limit of gap would be $176 million. And then under the $6 limit would be $398 million. Okay, so the difference there is about $222 million difference. Okay, and this is roughly about a dollar times the Measure 5 total real market value. Now, there's really only about six districts. I mean, if you kind of scan through the numbers, there's only about six school districts that had zero amount of gap. And again, it isn't what we're looking at here is there may have had compression at the particular property level that a school district had to pay, but when you look at it and aggregate it up to a code level, then those compression issues are minimized. So there's only a few school districts where all their code areas had compression. That's basically what it's saying. You guys have questions on this so far? Okay, because it really varies, you know. I mean, you can see the gap amounts, you know, the $5 limit, which is the fifth column there. I mean, it goes from zero to, like, one of the larger ones is Portland 1J, which is in Multnomah County there on the sixth page. And you can see that, that gap amount is about $19 million. So there's quite a range. You know, it's really each school district is going to have to evaluate for themselves, you know, how much the effort that it's going to take in order to get a local option, whether or not it's worth it, given how much authority they have.
The gap amount that's available is available how frequently?
Well, this is on 98-99 data. So, you know, each year that gap amount's changing. And this has grown significantly even since last year, 97-98 preliminary numbers.
So the one just for sake of example, Lake Oswego.
Okay.
And why don't you run through those numbers for me so I'll have...
Okay, so with Lake Oswego, the current tax authority, you know, is, now this isn't just the K-12 Lake Oswego school, okay, this is the school plus ESD plus community college, okay, that's $17 million. And then their major five tax authority under current law, which would be the $5, it's $22 million. Okay, so then to just figure out the difference between the two, it's $5 million. Okay, so that's
$5 million is available
currently
and annually.
Annually. It may grow, it may change, you know, it just also depends what the other school districts, you know, in other ESDs and community colleges are going to do in a given year. Because they can, again, this is a gap amount that I'm putting underneath a K-12 authority, but it's that community college in that same district could use that, or the ESD. So
This is fully based on property tax.
Only based on property taxes. And then if, like, Lake Oswego School, if you were to look at the other scenario, say they were going to have a $6 limit instead of a $5 limit, then you see the major five tax would be $27 million instead of the $22. Okay, so again, that's generating an additional $4.5 million in that gap authority.
The 9.6 available.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just so the other members will, I don't know if you knew the genesis of the six. Sandra Hartung and myself and maybe others have been just sniffing with numbers a little bit to, instead of having the distribution 10 and 5, keeping within the current limits, I'm sure the cities would be pleased. From 10 to 9. But it was just something for our running purposes. It may not be universally adored. Yes, Sandra Bell.
Would that change require constitutional change?
Yes. And just so that you're aware, you know, basically what, when we have this last column here, the dollar gap amount increase, it's basically the same amount as the dollar amount reduction that cities and government, other local governments would have to absorb.
So you were thinking for 10 and 6 then?
Oh, no. Members would maybe thought
that. 10 and 9.
All right. Steve, you for sure?
Yes, I'll be taking this information now and converting it to a per student basis for each school district so that you can see is it a $300 per student, $500 per student.
Yeah. Okay.
And I didn't get...
Well, what is the approximate size of Lake Oswego School
District? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't know the size number. Maybe one of the experts in the back of the other. Do you know one that has? You're familiar with this?
Portland has about 50-some thousand ADM.
Are you a non-sector? Do you get anything out of that back row?
No.
No impression. Okay. Well, we'll have some fun. Lizbeth, we thank you. Are you completed? Or are you...
No, I'm fine. All right. Unless you guys have other questions.
I appreciate the information. I really do. Thank you. Senator Harrison.
All right. Steve, do you have anything for us?
That's all that I have to say.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is take advantage of the information we've received, and I'd be glad to have comments now from direction from the committee if they have a continuing interest in pursuing and what remedies you might suggest. That our first witness, Lori Wimmer, kind of suggested she'd be happy to be a part of a work group.
Work group?
Nice idea.
Yeah.
And, yes, the
Senator Biden. Just sort of thinking out loud, sort of the discussion that we were having at lunch today, one of the concerns that I would have is if we were looking at local option being limited just to the property taxes, we're back sort of to the reality where a lot of the districts were before. Some of the larger districts probably could get them passed. Smaller districts probably unlikely. Particularly under the government, that's one set of concerns for me. Second set is the impact that continuing to go to the property tax well has on those on fixed incomes, the senior population. And I wonder if we were going to do this. I guess I would have, and as I said, once I don't have this thought out very well, but an inclination would be if we were going to adopt one that we would put into it a cap, something similar to a homestead exemption for senior citizens age 65 and over, something like that. I think that could have an advantage of, one, of keeping the price those people who don't really have any income options, you know, from going being pushed out of their houses. And secondly, it would tend to probably, if you're trying to get a levy pass, frankly, it would make it a little easier. You would get a lot of the negative votes out. My intent, if we were to do that, would be that that would just be taken out of the revenue stream. I wouldn't be talking about replacing it with state revenue. That would just be one of the realities of the option. Just a thought.
Is there anyone on this panel that would qualify for that exemption?
I'm not quite there yet. Close, but not quite there.
Yeah. All right, well, that's something to just, again, put into our discussion is to, if those folks should be exempted to 65 and over.
Probably the policy argument on those is that those folks really don't have kids in school. And they've been through that train of pain for months.
Except I would say, Senator Byron, and having listened to a lot of these campaigns, I think that those who have voted for the increase that benefited schools have said it's not just their kids, it's the entire community that benefits from the better educational system, and therefore at least someone who is willing comes out to be a part of some promotional campaign and say, yeah, we ought to pass this. I think you're right, though. Perhaps, generally speaking, there might be a diminishing ability to pay and maybe a little reluctance. But we'll just have to, we'll have comments from experts whenever we want to participate. So, Senator Starr, you look like you're anxious to say something, or are you just anxious?
I'm just very anxious.
All right. Well, we'll get some more information, and we'll try to get together a group of interested parties, and I'd like to personally pursue this option. I'm intrigued by the available funds within the gap. It's significant in my view, and it even staying within the current limitation, that's real money. And attractive to me has always been the fact that it is a local option. And it's not something we impose, but local taxpayers, if they so choose, can vote on this. And that's what I like about it. I know Senator Wilde is enthusiastic about this.
Mr. show.
Yes, Representative Byers.
Would the thought be if we were going to do this, I guess the danger would be with, in terms of policy language, that this would be expected to be above and beyond the basic education, which has become the responsibility of the state to provide?
That's my view. And that's the individual view of all members of this committee, but I think this is in addition to the floor that we hope will be significant. And I think it has to be in order to provide talent.
And the equality issue. I think it would be important that we do that, that we have that kind of policy language in any bill that we adopt.
And as a practical matter, we've discussed things like this in prior sessions, and those that are a bit nervous about whether or not their communities might support such an option wonder if they would be left behind. We have to do our level best to assure them that they won't, and then we have to back it up in actual budgetary fact. At least that's the way I see it. I'm just one of five. So, we will, we appreciate your work, Steve and Elizabeth, and we will come back to this subject. I think the House currently has had this matter under review, and they haven't finished discussion. So, in any event, if there's nothing further to come before the committee, we are adjourned.